Robert Macfarlane is one of the most celebrated nature writers in the English language. He has been regularly talked about as a Nobel Prize for Literature shortlist candidate. His new book is called Is a River Alive? Over the course of a couple of hundred pages, he will rewire the way that you think about rivers, and it is a beautifully, beautifully written book and well worth your time. I spoke to him recently and I asked him the question, is why would he now at this point in time be asking the question, is a river alive?
Our rivers are dying. It's as simple as that. And it feels terribly like I've written a book about the lives of rivers just as they're on the brink of expiring. I mean, I don't know how things are in Ireland, but here in England, things are terrible. We have not a single river in good overall health, according to Environment Agency standards, not one. Sewage pollution, plastic pollution, micropollutants, drought, it's all there. And it hurts us. I think we've realized that over the last 5 years. And at the same time as the rivers are dying, this beautiful thing is happening, which is citizen science and community groups are rising up to save the rivers they love and live with.
I'm going to disagree with you about your book being, because you're making it sound really rather depressing.
Okay, good. Thanks, yeah.
Well, there's something essentially optimistic at its heart, but I'm going to get on to that a little bit later on. I want you to start here by telling me about the Chalk River that you write about very early on in the book, because you tell its story from the moment of its birth right up until you intersect with it at what feels like something that might be close to the moment of its death. Tell me about that river.
Yeah, well, I was just up there yesterday. I'm up there, you know, every other day I volunteer there. So it's a tiny chalk spring. And a spring is a miracle in my view. It's where water issues from rock, and it's always surprising and wondrous to me to meet a spring, and I'm lucky to live within a mile of one. So it's probably been flowing for 10 to 11,000 years with only one break in the Great Drought of 76. And we know that it has been organizing life around itself, human life, as well as the life of animals and birds for all of that time. It's a friend, that river.
Would it have been possible to write an entire book about rivers if you didn't have strong feelings about the death of that river?
Oh, yes, I think so, because rivers flow through all of us. I mean, one doesn't need to be lucky enough to live within a mile of a spring to love rivers. I think, I mean, who are your rivers? Your life will have had rivers flowing through them. What do you remember when you think of
Oh, absolutely. Like, all of my most early childhood memories are all around and along and in and very frequently under a small tributary of the River Liffey.
I have never failed to ask the question, who are your rivers, to someone I'm speaking with and get a boring answer or a blank. They're lifelines, they're memory keepers, they're singers. We think with them, we feel with them, and yet, of course, power and instrumentalism, utilitarianism has rendered them into, in my country at least, sort of private assets, really. They've become drains, channels, sumps, dumps. They're there just to do our bidding. And so we've forgotten what rivers mean and what rivers do. So I guess that, yeah, the heart of the book is an attempt to reimagine rivers, to tell a new story, which is also a very old story about rivers as presences with lives and deaths and even rights.
You're not the first person to ask that question that way. Who is that river, rather than what is that river called? What's the difference between the cultures that think of their rivers as being more animate objects and asking the question who rather than what of them?
What is generally known as the modern rights of nature movements. This is which Ireland is, you know, fascinatingly in the forefront of at present, as you know, with the recommendation of a national referendum from the Citizens Assembly on whether or not to incorporate the rights of nature. That's fascinating and hopeful to me. But it's over the past 20 years, we've seen this idea that a river, a mountain, a forest might be a legal person, might have rights, the right to flow unpolluted to the sea, the right to grow in the case of the old growth forest without being chopped down. We've seen it take root and migrate and flourish in Tyrone, New Zealand, where in 2017 the Whanganui River was recognized at the highest level of parliamentary act as a living entity with rights. In Ecuador, where in 2008 the constitution was redrafted to include four rights of nature articles across six continents. It's happening. And it's an attempt in law to reimagine rivers as beings, as living entities, to quote the Whanganui Act.
And this is why I was saying I think that your book is essentially an optimistic one. You might be writing about all of the horrible things that we have done to rivers and the way that we have depleted them, but it's really hard to be anything other than optimistic because of nature's power to restore itself.
Oh, yes. I mean, rivers wrote this book. They wrote it with me. They are incredibly powerful, incredibly hopeful. They are easily injured, but they heal themselves with astonishing speed. And just to give one very brief example of that, the de-damming of the Klamath River, which flows out of Oregon and down into California, the biggest de-damming project in U.S. history, has taken down a series of immense dams that went up a century ago and blocked the passage of migratory fish, salmon in particular, for the entirety of that century. 2 weeks after the Iron Gate Dam, the biggest of them all, was taken down last autumn, scientists spotted a Chinook salmon, the first salmon to migrate up where the Iron Gate Dam stood to the headwaters of the Klamath to spawn. And the life found its way back so quickly. Rivers do that. They heal themselves hopefully fast. The desperate situation we've reached in parts of England is that fresh water has moved from being first undrinkable, then unswimmable, and now in places untouchable. It is almost dangerous to swim in stretches of river, especially after heavy rain, because the E. coli rating is so high. And there's a social and a cultural and an imaginative impact to that, as well as a public health one. Communities that used to gather in and around rivers can't do so anymore. So this is why it seems to me that there is a role for art, for storytelling, for writing. In fact, a key role at this moment in helping us reimagine that relationship, and then in driving the change that is needed to reverse that. And I'm really confident that's going to happen in England and Wales over the next 5 to 10 years. Really confident because of the passion that people feel here.
Robert McFarlane there. England's always a few years ahead of us on these kind of development issues. Let us just hope that we don't follow their path on this one. Is A River Alive was published last weekend. Eamon Cusack texts, "The River Dodder was my river as a youth, playing, falling in, cleaning up, preventing pollution. We all need to protect our rivers, something in Ireland we have not always done."